Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Joaquin Niemann is a special invitee to this year's Masters. Tournament chairman Fred Ridley making the call on Wednesday. Thorbjørn Olesen, as well as Ryo Hitsune, also earning a spot. Rex, what's your reaction besides my A-plus pronunciation of Ryo's last name?
You got scared there at the end. I could tell you panicked a little and you started leaking confidence, but you powered through it. I'm proud of you. I want to say, and I want to have a broader conversation because this came up on the round table that you skipped yesterday on Golf Today.
Didn't skip. Cam was sick, had a 103 degree fever, is now feeling much better. Thank you for your concern.
Well, and then you called me and Cam seemed fine. So all I'm saying is it seems like you just wanted a day off and you used your poor son, your lovely son, your magical boy of a child to get out of work, which seems like a really lame thing for a guy to do. Anywho, I'll go back to yesterday's roundtable because I thought it started an interesting conversation with the idea being, and I don't know how many people have seen the Greg Norman tweet about the world rankings, but it was another Greg Norman tweet or X about the world rankings pointing out that only two players that haven't recently gone to LIV Golf remain inside the top 50 sliding scale. So that's going to change over the next few weeks. I wanted to split that up into a twofold argument because the first part of the argument, the nuanced part, is we can all agree, and it seems like now Augusta National perfectly agrees with the idea that there are players on LIV Golf that are still world-class players. Just because they went to LIV Golf, that doesn't mean they're not world-class players and shouldn't be in the major championships anymore. And I think this is an important first step towards doing that. And I think all of the majors, it's going to be a little bit different with the other three versus Augusta National because, let's face it, they can make their own rules. It's what they're best at. In this particular case, though, I will give them so much credit because you look at this important first step as, yes, we can all acknowledge Joaquin Niemann should be in the Masters. And you can keep going down the list of anyone else. Maybe Taylor Gooch comes into the conversation. Whoever else might be in the conversation. That is one part of the conversation. There needs to be some sort of pathway beyond where we're at right now in the game and how we might come back together to get them in the majors.
I don't think this has anything to do with LIV Golf.
I don't think so either. It has everything to do with Joaquin Niemann being a world-class player, and I think they realize that, and Augusta National realize that. The other part of the conversation...
No. I don't think that's right at all. There were two words that were conspicuously absent from this press release.
LIV Golf.
Augusta National Golf Club. LIV Golf was not in the conversation. Joaquin Niemann is receiving a special invitation to this year's Masters for a couple reasons. One of them is that he's a former winner of the Latin America Amateur Championship, the tournament run by Augusta National in hopes of inspiring the next generation of players in that region. Joaquin Niemann is inarguably, if not the best, one of the best players from the region that is so important to Augusta National. Secondly, Joaquin Niemann won the Australian Open, a co-sanctioned event on the DP World Tour earlier this winter. That victory alone got him into the Open Championship. He also has a couple of other top five finishes on the DP World Tour, irregardless of what Joaquin Niemann's world ranking says. And his world ranking says that he is 81st in the world. Joaquin Niemann, A, is an important figure in Latin America, and B, one of the best players in the world right now. But two words that were not in that press release, and this has nothing to do with his season opening victory on LIV Golf, LIV Golf. LIV Golf was not in the press release. This has nothing to do with his accomplishments or accolades.
Well, no, of course not. Why would it have anything to do with LIV Golf? This has everything to do with the world-class player not in one of the major championships. And again, we can go back to the idea. We all agree that there is something flawed in the system right now, and we need to figure out a way to make sure that the top players don't slip through the crack. Because what fans, media, corporate sponsors, everybody wants is for the top players to go against each other in these major championships. That's what makes them special. And you're right. They didn't mention LIV Golf because they didn't have to. This has nothing to do with LIV Golf. You're just recognizing a top player, whatever their motivations are. And you pointed out very well what their motivations on this front might be. What I wanted to point out is the other half of the equation. And again, I don't want to get into the Greg Norman part of this because it's nothing but a straw man argument. It's ridiculous, the idea that he's still pounding on the drum that they somehow LIV Golf should get world ranking points to remedy this problem. That's what we're talking. It all comes back to the top players not in the majors like we want them to. For him to keep going back to the world ranking is just ridiculous because you knew before you started LIV Golf that this was going to be an issue, the team golf portion. The world ranking has made it clear each time you've approached them that they have a problem with this. And I even went to, during yesterday's roundtable, to the idea, all you needed to do was look at the PGA Tour. They had a built-in proof of concept right there in the Zurich Classic, that this is a PGA Tour sanctioned event that gives out FedEx Cup points and a lot of money. And you know what they don't get? World ranking points, because the world ranking doesn't want to deal with how they sort of sort out teams and partners and events and what's going to happen if Billy Horschel is walking down the fairway and his teammate needs him to do X, Y, or Z. That's not what they want to get into. So that's the hang up. The world ranking can get by the idea it's 54 hole events, shotgun starts, limited fields, whatever else you want to throw at them. They can find workarounds for that. The one thing they can't find a workaround is the team concept. And Greg Norman and Liv doesn't want to change that. So you can't keep going back to the world ranking. It's a ridiculous argument.
Well, it's also how kind of politics work in this country, isn't it? Where we just grind down your opponents, you ground down society by just beating the same drum, and eventually it just becomes an accepted part. That's clearly Greg Norman's strategy that he's employed over the past couple of years. It's pretty obvious, and it came out in some of the documents that players were told that we would be able to get world ranking points, just as they were told. Exactly, just as they were told that the PGA Tour could not suspend them for a single day.
Incorrect.
If they were to play Live Golf, also incorrect. And so I think it's an interesting point where we are now, where Live Golf could have made changes to kind of acquiesce the official world golf ranking, and yet they haven't. They added a couple wild card spots. That's obviously not going to be enough to lay some of those concerns. They still are diving headlong into the team competition, and you know, I've kind of made the argument on this podcast they should just kind of forget their bid for official world golf ranking points and just go straight into team competition. Instead, they're sort of stuck in this double in between down, where they want to be two things to two sections of people. Augusta National, on several occasions over the past couple of years, Rex, has made clear that they do not care for Live. They don't care for its format. They don't care for the disruption that is caused in the professional golf landscape. And keep in mind, this was the exact same group. Augusta National Golf Club was part of the exact same group that shut down Live's bid for official world golf ranking points. And so I think it shows you what they think of Liv Golf. And that's where kind of Taylor Gooch finds himself. Whether you look at official world golf ranking, whether you look at Data Golf's ranking, Taylor Gooch is a top 50 player in the world. According to those rankings, he's 40th. Joaquin Neiman is 22nd. I think that's inarguable that those rankings are more accurate. They might not be more fair. I think the official world golf ranking is a fair measure. However, it is not accurate. Does Taylor Gooch now have a legitimate gripe, being a three-time winner last season, being the best player on Live Golf, and yet it appears that he is going to be shut out of at least the first major of the year?
Yeah, I think he's got a legitimate gripe. And look, he's probably at the top of the list, and we can sit and sort of parse out maybe some of the others that may have a good gripe. I just don't like my ally when it comes to Taylor Gooch. I don't feel great about going to the mat for him, because we'll go back to last year's Open. And I think both of us got hung up with the same idea that his argument was the USGA has changed the rules to try to keep me out. Well, they had changed the rules months before he realized this. And if he really wanted to play in the US Open, he could have gone to qualifying, and he chose not to. So that one is always sort of...
Taylor Gooch also thought he could just play one live event and then come back to the PGA Tour.
So there's a lot
of
alarms. There's a lot of red flags when it comes to Taylor Gooch and his logic when it comes to this. So again, that's why I don't like him as my ally here. But yeah, I think he certainly does. And that's why you're right. Augusta National, just like probably the USGA and the PGA of America, Seth Wall has been pretty clear about his thoughts when it comes to Live Golf. Not big fans. I get it. I understand. They're part of the current ecosystem, and they're probably going to decide with that side always. I just think this announcement should be celebrated as a bit of a breakthrough for all the reasons you pointed out. Whatever the motivations are, Augusta National has realized that we don't have the best field in golf right now. Like, we need to find a way to work these players back into the fold, because they want Joaquin Neiman there. I would think they would want Taylor Gooch there. I would think there'd be probably a handful of live players you want to figure out how to get into the fold. As I said, the problem's going to be what's going to happen for the PGA Championship and then the US Open and then the Open Championship. They have qualifying, but as Taylor Gooch has proven, live golfers don't have much interest in qualifying.
Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, Joaquin Neiman is in the field this week at an Asian Tour event. He's one of 21 live players were in the field. So I think, you know, when it comes to Joaquin Niemann, it was kind of a perfect storm, was it not? He's from a region of the world that's very important to Augusta National. He won a marquee event, the Australian Open. He's performed well in two other starts in the DP World Tour, and he's also made the effort to try and qualify and take up membership on the DP World Tour. To try and get to the major championships rather than just kind of sitting back and lobbing grenades at the major organizations. I think that's something that is commendable as well.
And it needs to be pointed out. I think I saw a tweet on this from our boy Nosferatu, who's usually pretty good with the math. Because of where the world ranking is with that field that they're playing in this week on the Asian International Series,
it was again.
Even if he would have won, it wouldn't have moved him inside the top 50. So that probably, I would think, would have been in the minds of Augusta National as well. Here is someone, to your point, you're right, I'll pull that one back a little bit, who's trying, who's branching out a little bit and trying to figure out a way to play in the year's first major because it means that much to him. Then let's make sure he's in it.
Do you think Niemann is pulling the ripcord and flying home from Oman? I know next week he is playing in the LIV Golf event in Jeddah. But what if he's just like, I think I'm good here. I don't really need to tee it up.
I wouldn't blame him if he did, but I think those guys probably have learned after, what is it now, a year and a half, almost 2 years now of playing on LIV Golf. I think most of them are figuring out that, man, I got to play more than 15 times or 14 times a year. Like, this is not a good flow. I don't like it. Worked for Tiger Woods to a certain degree over his career because less was more when it came to Tiger. I think for the vast majority of players, more is more. Like, you do need to get some reps in. I'm not saying everyone needs to be Patrick Reed and play 35 times a year, but 14 is probably not enough.
And it could still give him a buffer if he is able to pick up some world ranking points with the PGA cutoff as well. Traditionally, it's not written in the guidelines, but traditionally they do extend invitations to the top 100 in the world rankings. Again, Joaquin Niemann, as of this posting, is 81st in the world. Sausage fingers up. Please go ahead.
Sausage fingers up. You reached out to our bestie, Lil Russ, trying to look for topics. You were a little panicky this morning that we weren't going to have topics for this podcast. And I disagree with that, again, because you skipped yesterday's roundtable and because Eamon being maximum Eamon Lynch threw all kinds of just
a lot of conspiracy theories. Oh, yeah.
A lot of conspiracy theories. And I did want to run this one by you. I'm sure you have somewhere you wanted to steer the pod. I apologize for interrupting you. However, when it came to Rory McIlroy, and we addressed his comments, I think on Sunday from last week in Los Angeles about a global tour, and he kind of elaborated a little bit and gave a little bit more detail. And the question, and this, I feel, all right, Eamon, like if this is wrong, please call me out next time we're on air because you're not shy about this. I feel like this came straight from Eamon. Is Rory McIlroy's thoughts on a global tour, quote unquote, realistic? And my response to that was, not only is it realistic, it is inevitable.
Yeah. I mean, I think I fully agree. I think that there's a couple sticking points. Like, I think there's a couple sticking points. I think
there's a litany of youngish, sticking points, not a couple.
But for youngish Americans, let's call them 28 to 32, I think there are going to be certain hangups, and it's going to take a lot of convincing to hop on a plane and travel internationally 6 to 10 times a year. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, they've done one-offs where they go chase appearance money. You think back to the South African Open late last year, Justin Thomas and Max Homa both hopping on a jet. They both played well there. Max Homa got the victory, but that's kind of a one-off. And you're building a safari, and then you head home and collect some money for the holidays. But sort of building in these swings. I'm actually glad that you took the conversation here because I actually took the time. I had a lot of time on a red eye that I did not sleep on to kind of map out what this world tour could look like. And it's very complicated. I think the easiest part, Rex, is actually knowing where you should go domestically and then where you should go internationally. It's actually creating a workable flow throughout the calendar year that I think is the hard part. So if you look at the domestic stops and where the PGA Tour should go, and I'll do these slowly so people can follow along. I think you really have to lean into the best courses, the best venues.
I'm writing them down.
On the PGA Tour. And so if you're looking domestic in the U.S., I think you have to go to Kapalua. It's a recognizable venue. It may not be the best golf course, but it is incredibly recognizable to fans. You would do Torrey Pines, which is hosted the U.S. Open. You would go Pebble Beach, one of the meccas of U.S. golf. You would go to Phoenix and the rowdiest fan base, potentially going to be a little bit more tame in the coming weeks.
Hold on. Let's try this a different way. You're gonna wear this down because this is what you like to do. You like to drone on a little bit. You do yammer from time to time.
This is not droning on. This is naming the domestic stops that I would take.
Well, you're yammering. Let's start with the starting point of, I think, 24 events is what Rory sort of threw out there. And look, he's not on the policy board anymore, so this isn't insider information. This is where he's starting from. I think we can both agree. You can lop off four of those. It's the four major championships, right? And let's just include those as that's four of the 24. So now you're starting at 20 with the idea that, as you pointed out, 8 to 10 of those need to be international. We all on the same page here?
Probably. I think 10's too many. I don't think there's any way that you can get 10.
Could be, because the reason I stopped you is because you had already named at least three, maybe four West Coast events.
Correct.
And so you're going to have to,
West Coast is the best coast. That is the highlight of the PGA Tour schedule. If those are the best events, you can't have them up against football, and you can't have them in kind of the run up to the Masters. So, again, the tricky part is going to be creating a workable flow to also get events internationally. And so we're up to, I believe, four, including Phoenix. Then you do Riviera. Then you do Bay Hill. Then you do the Players. And then you're looking at really the best courses that you have remaining on the PGA Tour schedule. To me, that's Hilton Head. To me, that's Muirfield Village and the Memorial. To me, that's Quail Hollow and what will no longer be known as the Wells Fargo Championship. I do believe you'll see a match play event back on the schedule. Then you have the three playoff events, the St. Jude, the BMW, and Eastlake for the Tour Championship. That's where you need to go, in my opinion, domestically. You could also throw in Colonial as well, if Hilton Head is not really your flavor. That's it. If you're the PGA Tour and you're trying to create this 80-person world tour for the very best players in a very limited schedule, that's it. There is nothing missing from that domestic U.S. schedule. Where it gets interesting then, Rex, is how you blend that into this international schedule and creating this world tour and having some swings, but also building in the time off for players to travel, to work on their game, to bet in new equipment, whatever the case may be. Because if you're going to have a 24-event schedule for the very best 80 players, the probability, the likelihood, almost the inevitability, is that all of those players are going to be teeing it up. They're not going to be taking any of these events off. It's almost like a contracted situation, just like LIV Golf is.
You didn't name a Northeast venue.
Because they don't have any currently on the PGA Tour. I'm like,
well, the Travelers would be a Northeast venue. That would be the obvious one.
Not going to Connecticut. Nope. Connecticut is not on the docket. But I'm like, you have to have a Boston.
I mean, the Meadowlands really aren't New York City either. You have to have a Chicago. They play football there.
Like you have to go to those big markets. I'm with you. But as the current PGA Tour schedule stands, You don't have that, and you're not going to be, Travelers is not going to be one of them.
And I think Quail probably isn't a viable option as it stands right now. As we know, Wells Fargo,
Charlotte,
is,
huge market, got to go there.
Huge market, and look, I think Quail Hollow, the club itself, is very, very popular among the players. I think Johnny Harris has created his own version of Augusta National. I just don't know if it's viable going forward from a corporate standpoint. From what I've been told, they've touched on and tried to essentially nail down two or three different potential sponsors to take Wells Fargo Place. Not a lot of traction right there. The match play has always been a problem. I don't know why you would be motivated to bring that back.
I
don't think anybody last year looked at each other and went, man, I'm going to miss the match play. No one said that.
Listen back to the podcast. I love that tournament. And I think once a year.
You never covered it, number one. So you loved it so much, you never wanted to get off your couch.
Covered it all the time. Covered it all the time. No. I covered it three times.
You
in
did
Austin.
Not.
I loved it. I loved it.
You
I
loved Austin is what you loved. Nope. You didn't particularly
covered
like
it,
the match
covered
play.
It in Dove Mountain. I covered it at Harding Park. Loved the
I don't
tournament.
I think you did Dove Mountain.
Sure
and
did.
I don't think I could get anybody to the top of that mountain with me.
We were in the snow.
We were in the snow together. I think to address whatever combination, and you named 17 events counting the three playoff events, and whatever combination, I think the match play is a little ridiculous. Again, no one is sitting around clamoring for the new Mets played a cup. Fine, you love it. But no one else. There's no petitions. There's no social media. There's no outcry to bring back the Mets play. So I don't know why you would want to create something that doesn't exist when there's plenty of other good options for you to go to.
Quail Hollow would be because people are pissed off about other stuff.
Quail Hollow would be questionable. You're not in the Northeast. That seems to be an issue. Probably the one issue that you brought up that I don't think will be a problem, according to you, to this. So you named 17 events, so 17 international events. And we can name those probably pretty easy and give some pretty good options. Those could all be bookends. Those could be two or three at the, you know, before the West Coast swing starts and two or three after the playoffs. That way it doesn't encroach on the idea that this is going to, and you're kind of assuming that the DP World Tour continues as it is in whatever the future looks like. Drink up, folks. I appreciate another fun comments about that one. Whatever the future looks like, drink twice. I think we can safely assume that players will know European players will no longer be scrambling trying to get their minimums on that tour to maintain, you know, their status for the Ryder Cup or whatever the case may be. I think that's going to be baked into the future of the game of golf. I don't hate this. I mean, I think you've clearly put some thought into it. What you've touched on, though, and I'm glad we did this as an exercise, is how complicated this is going to be. I mean, you're going to be building a plane while it's in the air, and it's not going to be easy because you have so many competing interests now that you've added a layer of the international component to it.
So right now, if you look at the PGA Tour schedule, the weakest part, I think, inarguably, is the summer. It's the summer and the events around the U.S. Open and around the Open Championship. It's just a dead part of year. In my opinion, you should move a lot of parts from the West Coast swing, so early in the year, into the summer. Last I checked, they just had the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach in the month of July. It went swimmingly. You still get, you know, the weather conditions, but the sun is more likely to shine than it does in the Crosby and Clambake weather that you have in mid-February. Riviera will still be spectacular. Obviously, you cannot have you cannot go to Phoenix that time of year because you'd be melting on the face of the sun. And so there's probably some workability with that aspect. But you look at the summer, like if and you're looking at some of these international events that you could go to, I would do basically a month abroad in June and July, culminating with the Open Championship. I think the Irish Open. You have to include, I think the Scottish Open, you obviously have to include, that's a co-sanctioned event on the PGA Tour already. And then you can do kind of the Middle East at the beginning of the year. And I think after the playoffs, you can use, you know, you can do the BMW PGA, you can do the Dunhill Links, which includes St. Andrews in that rotation. You have Australia potentially kind of kicking off the Middle Eastern swing as well. There's definitely a way to do it. And it's going to take a lot of planning again to kind of build in the off weeks and the potential travel headaches that you're going to have for, let's say, a player who lives in Jupiter, kind of sojourning all over the world. That's going to be very taxing on a body. And I'm not sure that's going to be of keen interest to some of these players. But it can be done. And I think, again, pie in the sky stuff, I think it could be spectacular.
Actually, correction on my math here. You said Maui. And I didn't count Maui, right? Correct? Am I right on that? You did say Century.
I wanted Kapalua. Yep.
That's fine. So that leaves 16. I'm sorry. There was 18 events that you recommended. So that leaves essentially six spots for the internationals. And what you named, you want to give one to the Irish, one to the Scottish. And so now you're looking at four spots. Yep. I think it's obvious you have to find something in Australia based on the success that LIV Golf had at Adelaide.
I would go Kapalua to Australia to the
Middle East. The other way. Logistically wise, if you want to do it the right way, you would start in the Middle East, go to Australia, then go to Hawaii, and then go to the West Coast. Like that's.
But again, I'm moving the West Coast into the summer.
I don't mind that. I think you and I had this discussion after the nightmare that was Pebble this year about, and I've made this argument before. I've written this column before. If you sat down and you wanted to build the best PGA Tour schedule you could, based on golf course, market, flow of schedule, everything. If you really wanted to create the best product possible, playing Pebble Beach in February is not the time of year to do it. Yes, we do get fantastic weeks from time to time. And we also, quite a bit, get what we got this year. So you're right. Play Pebble Beach in the summertime. We've all been there in the summertime. You and I were there in the summertime and we loved it. play LA in the summertime. Again, it's very, very nice. That's when their weather is the absolute best. That's when people want to come outside and see sports. So I'm with you on that one. I think six international events is not enough for what they need, what they want to do.
I heard Eamon's argument on Golf Today on Tuesday, essentially being the European Tour, the DP World Tour, has been doing this for years, and they have failed to find kind of commercial support to kind of fortress or buttress this World Tour concept. You know, you can go to Japan, you can go to Australia, you can go to Dubai, but if sponsor interest is not there, if media partner interest is not there, if player interest in turning up at that event is not there, it's going to fall flat. It's going to take a lot of alignment with a lot of different parties for this to actually work.
And he was absolutely right. And I think the best example of this would have been the President's Cup that was down in South Africa. By all accounts, really, really successful President's Cup. Like, you look at the way it ended in the dark with Ernie Els and Tiger Woods sort of duking it out, probably one of the closest President's Cup in the history of that event. I've been told by people who were there that commercially it wasn't all that successful, to Eamon's point. Like, it's hard to sell these things. I will point, in modern day, the last President's Cup that was played in Melbourne, now granted Tiger Woods was the captain, and that probably factored into it as well, that looked as if it was a wildly successful event. By all accounts, Adelaide last year on the LIV Golf schedule was probably their most successful event, either from a commercial or a fan perspective, whatever the case may be. It's not going to be an easy egg to crack. These are not easy markets to break into, but if you deliver the product that we all want them to deliver, which would be the top 70 or 80 players, including the players from LIV, if you find a way to unify the game and you find a way to branch out and to make it travel, and to your point about younger players not wanting to travel, I mean, I think if this is it, if you tell a young star that, look, you have accomplished, you made it to the top of the mountain, and these are your 24 events, like, go out and make the most of them. I don't think flying from somewhere in the Middle East to Australia, to Hawaii, to the West Coast is that demanding, because it happens in pretty much every other sport. You look at tennis, three of their four major championships are played outside the United States.
I just think it would represent a significant change in how they've traditionally operated, from junior golf to college golf to now their lives on the PGA Tour. You're basically just traveling abroad 2 to 4 times a year, depending on your eagerness to see new markets. And so to now go 6 to 10 times and to kind of be away from home for a month and to put more mileage on your body, which Rory McIlroy, to his credit, I mean, he's been doing this his entire career and has done so incredibly successfully, but I think that's going to certainly represent a shift for the Scottie Schefflers and the Jordan Spieths and the Justin Thomases of the world, who have not done it all that often.
And just to put a bow on this, today in my household is National YouTube TV Day. And by that, I mean, I canceled YouTube TV after the Super Bowl, like I do every year. And today is the last day. I've discovered that it happens on the same cycle. So today is the last day I'm going to have TV. And I was being ridiculed by my sons. Ridiculed by my sons, and since everyone is so good about commenting, I would be curious to crowdsource this one. That am I the only one, and I don't consider myself cheap, maybe I am, but I just feel like after football is over, and to be clear, I have access to all the golf. I have Peacock, thank you NBC Universal, appreciate that. I have ESPN Plus, I have Paramount Plus. You know, that comes with Prime Video, by the way. That's how I get that one. Anyway, I can watch all the golf when I'm home. That's part of my job, I can still do. I just have no interest in the rest of it. Am I the weirdo here?
If you have to ask whether you're cheap, you probably are cheap. I mean, I'm not the perfect person to ask, admittedly. I have a 5-year-old.
I said weirdo.
2-year-old. We have every app under the sun. We're not ever minimizing or canceling. If anything, we're simply adding, it's a brave new world, and that's the world that we live in. Rex, this does actually work as a perfect segue to full field season, which we're now to embark on the PGA Tour schedule. 3 of the first 7 tournaments of the PGA Tour schedule were signature events. We've gone over them. They were not necessarily a big hit, especially 2 of the last 3 weeks. But now we're entering a period where 6 of the next 8 are full field events, including this week, the Mexico Open, where Checks Notes' Tony Finau, the defending champion, is the headliner this week. Nikolai Højgaard also in the field. We've bandied about kind of the importance of the full field event, how they can still deliver, if not ratings, at least some intrigue in kind of this broader PGA Tour schedule. That's not where I want to go with this discussion. But in your opinion, Rex, is there still room for both? Based on what we've seen with the signature events and the stars, are you going to be as eager to tune into these full field events knowing what we know now?
Well, I mean, if you kind of look at what we've gotten to your point so far, I made the argument yesterday on Golf Today that if you like storytelling, if you like the heartstrings, if you like someone who pulls themselves up from their own bootstraps, there you had Chris Kirk and Grayson Murray to open the season in Hawaii. I think you've had cool stories across. You had an amateur win for the first time in decades on the PGA Tour. The one thing you were missing is sort of that top player winning. I think Wyndham Clark was the highest ranked player when he won, and he was number 10 in the world. So he was the only top 10 player to win so far on 54 holes as well. All of those things, not to take it away from. I countered this argument yesterday saying that there has to be room for this on the PGA Tour schedule. Because again, Eamon being Maximum Eamon wanted to send the probing question out that are the Mexico Opens of the world over? No, I don't think they are over because there's still a lot of professional golf. There's still a lot of real estate out there to be sold. Someone wanted to buy this. There was a sponsor that has interest in this. There may or may not be fans down there. I've never been to the Mexico Open, but there is a level, a modicum of interest. And if you're a business, then you're going to try to make the most of that business going forward. Based on the 15-minute conversation you and I had parsing out whatever the world schedule is going to look like, the question is, how are the Mexico Opens and the rest of them, not to pick on Mexico, but you're this week, how are the Mexico Opens going to fit in to that universe? I do think there is a place for that. I think it was Johnson Wagner during the roundtable who brought up the idea of just take whatever's left after you've cherry picked and come up with this 24 event schedule that is going to make everybody happy and be the next future of professional golf. Take whatever's left and meld that with the Korn Ferry Tour and create what Rory has talked about, sort of that our European football pyramid, where everyone starts at the bottom and you aspire to work yourself up to the top. And that means you play in the Mexico Opens of the world like you do now with an eye towards the Arnold Palmer Invitational, right? If you're in the field this week at Mexico, you know exactly what a good week would mean. It probably means you get into that next signature event. And I think that is motivation in and of itself. Is it going to be a sustainable product that people are going to watch? That's the million-dollar question, whatever it might be.
We spent the first 10 minutes of this podcast talking about the Masters. And why did we talk about the Masters? Because it's one of the four biggest weeks of the year. We are in the middle of this fight about regular season golf. And it's never become more apparent that regular season golf serves, I would say, little purpose other than to provide context for the major championships. It provides storylines. It boosts a player's profile, whether it's
entertaining. Now I'm gonna stop you there a little bit. Like, it's entertaining. If you weren't entertained watching the Canadian Open, just to throw something out last year, like, man, you don't like golf, man.
But I'm saying, for I would say a casual sports fan, this is the fan that the PGA Tour with this new infusion of cash is trying to tailor its market to. These regular season tournaments provide nothing other than context. Yes, weekly entertainment, sure. For diehards, yeah, we have a cornucopia of things to discuss each and every week on the PGA Tour. But big picture, if you zoom out 30,000 feet, we're basically boosting profiles. We're analyzing, okay, Victor Hovland and Max Homa are off to slow starts of the year as the Masters continues to draw near. You see what I'm saying? And so these full field events, which you're going to have six of the next 8 weeks, there's nothing wrong with them. They are serving a purpose. If Nikolai Højgaard can win this tournament, we are anointing another young 20-something star. I think that's great. If Tony Finau can win this tournament for the second year in a row, he also has a top two finish since the tournament started in 2022. I think that's great. It gives him a lot of momentum as the calendar turns to the Florida Swing, and with the Masters now just 2 months away. Like, this can still serve a purpose. Is it going to draw monster ratings? Can't imagine. Is there going to be a lot of talking points when we do our recap podcast on Sunday night? Probably not. That's perfectly okay. And we're all just kind of operating in the ecosystem that is the current fractured professional landscape.
if you ask me the highlight from last year's Major League Baseball season, I'm probably going to say Game 7 of the World Series, because nothing's more magical than that in all of sports, but especially in baseball. There was also 162 games they played just to get to the playoffs last year. And those 162 games matter. Like, look, you get into the middle of the summer, just like we do in golf, and they get a little long and they get a little boring and people start kind of tuning out, and let's reconnect in the fall when, you know, we get to the playoffs. That's fine, because you don't get to Game 7 without the 162 games. You have to have the 162 games. You just can't.
That's
start
why it's
with
the culmination of the FedEx Cup season, Rex. We've heard this over and over again over the past 16 years. Tour championship, culmination, FedEx Cup season.
You kind of ruined that for me. But all right, I see what you're saying. I see where you went there. Yes, I 100% agree, because you couldn't just pick the two teams you thought spring training's just getting started. And we can't be like, you know what? The Yankees, they're going to be pretty good. Let's just pick them, and let's go with the Dodgers. And let's just go straight to the World Series. Like, you can't do that. That's not the way it works. And it's very, very similar to golf. I think you're right. I think there will be compelling storylines. I think it will be compelling television and compelling things for you and I to talk about. We can only hope that someone gets DQ'd for another stupid rule, because that seems to be the one thing that moves the needle in golf. No, it's probably not going to kill it when it comes to ratings. It's probably not going to kill it when it comes to clicks on websites. But you have to have these. That's sports.
If that is not the biggest plug and the biggest tease for our Sunday night podcast, recapping the Mexico Open, I don't know what possibly is. Rex, your home for the rest of the week. Cognizant Classic on deck. I'll be there for a special project next week, but you are home at least until Bay Hill. What are you firing up on the grill?
I actually have something tonight that I'm very excited about, and I actually had to order. Do you have like a taco rack?
No.
Like when you make tacos. Anyway, someone sent me this link, and I couldn't. I wish I knew what the website is, because I always want to give credit. But someone sent me a link of someone making smash burger tacos, and I can kind of walk.
Oh, it's such a fad. Oh no, it's a fad. It's terrible. Do not do it. Abort.
It looks delicious. I'm doing it. No. I'm totally. Anyway, I'm doing it tonight, so we'll have something to talk about on Sunday night. Apparently, mine just fell flat. What are you doing this weekend?
It's a fad. I've tried them. Don't do it. It's really hard to kind of. It's because the bun or wrap or shell, it does not provide it does not provide the proper contrast that you're looking for texturally with a burger. A burger is meant to be eaten on a bun. There's a lot of things that are delicious in a taco. Ground beef is one of them, but ground beef is also kind of crumbled up as a burger patty, and trying to bend it and trying to get it as pliable as you need to for the smash burger taco, big miss. It's just an internet fad that is sure to die a speedy death.
Burger meant to be eaten on a bun. Got it. Okay, yep. What do you got going this weekend?
I got some ahi tuna steaks, as I've mentioned a couple times on this podcast. Cholesterol is an issue, and so we're working to remedy that in quick fashion. I'll be doing that on Wednesday. Also, Publix had BOGO chicken wings, and So I'll be doing them my new favorite way, which is to smoke them for 45 minutes until they're about 170 internal, and then flash fry them at 365.
Attaboy.
In my little countertop fryer for 4 or 5 minutes. Life is all about balance. Ahi tuna steaks, trying to get those very important omega-3s, and then just killing it absolutely and flushing it down with a 6-pack of beer with the fried chicken wings.
Actually, you fry them. What sauce do you toss them in?
I do a mild buffalo sauce. As you know, I'm a little bit of a wussy when it comes to heat, but it is Frank's mild buffalo sauce. Gives me just enough tang. Gets the nose going a little, gets the eyes watering just a little bit, but does not completely blow the top off like the regular one does.
The Texas Pete is really good. Maybe a tad too spicy for you, but that's what we use. The Texas Pete is delicious.
All right, folks, that is a wrap up for this Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lab. We'll be back on Sunday, hopefully, to recap a thrilling, captivating, non-stop action final round from the Mexico Open. If not, we'll still talk about it anyway, and we'll have a lot of fun doing so. In the meantime, make sure you guys go to nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, commentary, and features from the world of golf. Hope you guys have a great rest of the week. Talk to you in a few days.
Burger meant to be eaten on a bun.